Coming to you from the Forge of Freedom studio in the heart of America, a podcast dedicated to preserving freedom and inspiring personal success. Freedom is born and lives through you, the individual, and it dies in the shadows of tyranny, motivating our listeners to become well-rounded, freedom-minded people with the body of an athlete, the mind of a stoic, and the spirit of a warrior. The Tree of Liberty lives on through you, the Forge of Freedom. And now here's your host, Alex Uli.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Forge of Freedom podcast. I'm your host, Alex Uli, and this is episode 82 of the Forge of Freedom. This week for Monday Gun Day, I've got Mike Uli back in the studio. Welcome back, Mike.
Hey, thanks for having me here today.
Yeah, it's been almost a month since you were in the saddle for an episode. We had Paul Lathrop for a Monday Gun Day a few weeks ago, and then I was off for a couple of weeks, so got to shake off a little bit of the rust here and get another Monday Gun Day underneath or behind of us. So welcome back.
I appreciate it. And by the way, sorry to see Paul had to put his podcast in hiatus. I think that's the word he used.
For a little while,
and we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, of course. If for those who don't know, Paul Lathrop was the man behind the Polite Society podcast, and he's been doing that for over a decade now. So started out as Politics and Guns. Of course, if you're curious about Paul and his podcast, he's got a huge backlog of episodes that he's recorded with lots of great guests. I think he's still doing the Eye on the Target radio. He's producing it. He's not, you know, one of the hosts. But go check out Polite Society podcast and then also the episode that we had with him as a guest. But today, we're going to talk about the concept a lot of people refer to as AOJ, which refers to ability, opportunity, and jeopardy. And Mike, why is that important? Of course, you and I are both attorneys. We're both firearms instructors. And each state has its own set of laws about when self-defense with a firearm is justified, or when self-defense period, whether it's with deadly force or some lesser than deadly force, lesser degree of force. But there are some sort of universal principles that apply no matter where you are within the United States, right? Not obviously, it's important to know the state law, but it's important to know some more broad, generally applicable principles as well. Is that true?
Absolutely true. I guess, first of all, I want to say you mentioned that we're attorneys, and I guess the first thing we should say is, although we are attorneys, this podcast episode or YouTube or wherever people are watching this should not be construed as legal advice, and this is simply being presented for educational purposes only. And, of course, we give out the typical caveat that you should consult with your own legal counsel with regard to these issues. With that said, though, I absolutely agree with you. The law can be nuanced and quite different from only just slightly different from state to state, or it could be markedly different from state to state. Nonetheless, there are some notions in the law. Self-defense law is very, very old. And there's some notions in the law that carry through no matter through time and also through location, depending on what state you're in. And one of the things that folks probably know if they've listened to our podcast before, understand that we teach a law of self-defense class, or a self-defense class that emphasizes the law. It's about five and a half hours long. And what we try to do is come up with some principles that are applicable no matter where you're located in the United States.
Now, and we're not making these up for our class either, right? I mean, and we'll talk more about that, but these are principles that have been talked about, like you said, for centuries, if not millennia. Mm-hmm. And the law has simply codified sort of these principles in law in various forms.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about some of these principles today. We're not even going to get to talk about all of them today, but another little caveat I want to give you as far as modern references for this, where we're influenced a lot, is from Assad Ayyub and his work, The Gravest Extreme. I think you have a copy of the book. It's one of his older books, but still, I think, very, very good and worth a read. And a lot of these concepts are explained in there. And of course, Massad has other books that have come out since that. And he has his training organization. Probably the primary class and course that I'd recommend to people where they'll hear these concepts in quite in detail. He takes about 20 hours of classroom instruction to explain these is his MAG 40 class. It's sort of the pinnacle in terms of instruction in this area.
Yeah. And that's the Masoud Ayoob group. I'll link to the website where you can check out. I know he's got his most of his 2024 schedule up. At least he got that up recently. Yeah. But this book, I want to mention one thing that we talk about here. We'll get into it's not a large book, so I'd encourage you to buy it and read it and internalize these concepts. But page 10 is where we get the standard that he sets here. Okay. That we talk about. Right. And Mike, chime in here, you want to say what that standard is that he lays out?
Yeah, and I don't have page 10 memorized, but right. the concept that we teach is a standard that you can use, I think, no matter what jurisdiction you're in, to determine whether or not you must use deadly force or you're going to be justified in using deadly force. And that is, the question is presented to you, and you must be able to answer this in the affirmative, is whether I'm facing an immediate, otherwise unavoidable threat of death or grave bodily harm to me or another innocent. Yep. Now, aside from the prepositions in that sentence or paragraph, every one of those terms or those words that I used has a very significant importance, and all of them need to be present. With one exception, I use the term otherwise unavoidable. That goes to the concept of stand your ground, which we've talked about before, and the duty to retreat. There are some jurisdictions still remaining, although they are in the minority, although it's a substantial minority, where you have a duty, a legal duty to retreat, to attempt to retreat, if you can do so safely before you're justified in using deadly force. So, back again, the question is, am I facing an immediate, otherwise unavoidable threat of death or grave bodily harm to me or another innocent? If that's present, then you're generally going to be justified in using deadly force.
Yeah. And one thing I want to, we're going to talk about AOJ, ability, yeah. Opportunity, jeopardy. That AOJ helps us understand that standard that you just laid out, but it's not all of the equation. It's only part of the equation.
Yeah.
And I think, and Mike, I would like to get your thoughts on this too, but another person that has great resources about the law of self-defense is the man who wrote the book, The Law of Self-Defense, Andrew Branca, and he talks about five elements that are necessary. And I think this helps sort of conceptualize this area of the law in a way that's easy to understand. He talks about innocence. So you have to be innocent. You can't be the initial aggressor. He talks about imminence, which is basically the equivalent of immediacy, the immediate portion of Masoud Ayoob's standard. He talks about proportionality, avoidance, and reasonableness. And AOJ really primarily gets at the imminence or the immediacy portion of the analysis, and also the reasonableness portion of the analysis as well, I think. So the AOJ that we're going to talk about here shortly is really just about a portion of that standard.
Yeah. And Andrew Branca's book, I've read his book. It's a great book. I don't know what edition he's in now. I've read one of the older editions, but really his concept is, I think it's important for folks to understand, you know, I talked about, are you facing an immediate, otherwise unavoidable threat of death or grave bodily harm to you or another innocent? Andrew's standards are essentially the same with different words. I think some people may want to use his terminology. It may be easier for them to remember and analyze. I started with Masoud Ayoob's, and I have that internalized. And I think what's important is if you're carrying a firearm, you need to have that standard internalized to the extent that you think you may have to use that firearm as a tool, as a life-saving tool. Mm-hmm. And you need to have those things internalized. And they're both sort of basically saying the same thing with different phrases. And for me, if you use massage, you have to understand that whether or not you've met that standard that I've articulated several times here is going to be based upon the view of reasonableness. And that's reasonableness from your standpoint and from the objective juror standpoint as well. And we use AOJ, I think. It goes to imminence, but it also goes to the reasonableness or not. Was it reasonable for you to determine that you were facing an immediate, otherwise unavoidable threat of death or grave bodily harm to you or another innocent? Yeah. And how do we determine that? One of the three concepts we can look at are ability, opportunity, and jeopardy. We can go into those in more detail.
Yeah. And just right before we do, I just want to sort of elaborate on some of the things you mentioned. I think Andrew Branko would say, well, let me back up. Why are we as attorneys talking about a book by a former police officer?
And, may still be a police officer's manufacturing reserve.
And a book by an attorney. Well, it's because they don't talk about these things in law school. And Andrew Branko, I know, has said on numerous occasions that his way of thinking about self-defense law changed tremendously when he took Massad Ayoub's MAG 40 class. And so what Massad Ayoub lays down in the greatest extreme is sort of the seminal work in this area, Andrew Branko sort of elaborates on. And I think the two things that Andrew Branko adds to the analysis that is not captured in the standard from Massad Ayoub, the standard that says you have to be facing an immediate, otherwise unavoidable threat of death or grave bodily harm to you or another innocent person, is innocence. So you have to be innocent. That's not quite captured in that standard. Massad Ayoub, that standard assumes that you're innocent. Okay. And then
I'm going to disagree because we say, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And proportionality. So those two are not quite captured within that standard set out by Massad Ayoub. And that's where I think Andrew Branko adds something to the table. Now, I want to be fair here. Massad Ayoub talks about those things, which is why he assumes that those two things are present when he gives us this standard, right? Yeah. So what we're talking about today is imminence or immediacy and reasonableness. And part of the analysis there is AOJ, ability, opportunity, jeopardy.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would, you know, obviously Massad doesn't use the word proportionality, but I think that definition of whether I'm facing an immediate, otherwise unavoidable threat of death or grave bodily harm, I think that brings in the proportionality concept. An immediate brings in the concept of imminence too. So I think we're probably splitting hairs here. I think you should read both of their books. No question about that. And, you know, one of them may work for some people a little better than others conceptually. I don't know.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that one is better than the other. I think, you said, Mike, they're both great resources. And for those who are watching, this is the law of self-defense, which I know from time to time you can get if you just pay shipping, if you buy it from Law of Self-Defense rather than Amazon.
So. Yeah. And that's not for folks. The newest versions are probably a different color. That's not the newest iteration of his book. But
yeah, this is the second edition.
But anyway.
So Mike, you want to get into AOJ?
Yeah. And first of all, a couple of other things. Like I said, we talk about this in a 5.5 hour class, so I probably digress here some. But there's a whole discussion to be had about, you know, this innocence, imminence, proportionality, reasonableness, avoidance, all those things. I mean, we can take hours and talk about each one of those. So keep that in mind. But we're going to talk about a little nugget here, which is ability, opportunity, and jeopardy. Ability, and once again, I think this goes more probably to the reasonableness of your assumption that you were justified. And it's, you know, ultimately, you're going to have to demonstrate through you may testify or you may not. That's a whole nother podcast. In a trial, if you're tried, but you're going to have to convince a jury that you believed that you were facing that immediate, otherwise unavoidable threat of death, grave bodily harm to you or another innocent, and that an objective, reasonable juror is going to believe that an objective person would make that same assessment and conclusion.
Right. They're going to have to judge your actions based on what's commonly known as the reasonable man doctrine or the reasonable person doctrine, which is just that knowing what you knew at the time, would a reasonable person have done what you did?
And the way we do that, convince folks that you were acting reasonably, is we demonstrate these elements existed. That is ability, opportunity, and jeopardy when we're focusing on the third person that we had to use deadly force to defend ourselves against. And the first one is ability. And really what that goes to, it's sort of self-explanatory, actually. Did the person have the means? I hate to use the word ability again, but did they have the means, the power?
Yeah, I like the word power.
Yeah. Did they have the means to actually inflict death or grave bodily harm upon you? And, you know, that can exist for a number of ways. And you're going to have to be able to articulate that either yourself or through your attorney and through evidence. Obviously, if a gun is present, a weapon is present, a large knife is present, a ball bat, a difference in size and strength, a number of perpetrators, you were outnumbered, you're a 80-year-old person and the perpetrator is a 20-something-year-old man, lack of ability on your part from a physical standpoint, whether the person is highly skilled. One caveat about that, if the person is in fact highly skilled, they're an MMA fighter or something like that, you wouldn't be able to use that later as evidence that you thought the person had the ability to inflict harm upon you. But if you knew it at the time, the skill level of the opponent. And then another thing to think about in terms of whether the perpetrator had the ability to inflict death or grave bodily harm upon you is whether or not you're in a position of disadvantage. And what I mean by that predominantly is whether you're on the ground. If somehow you've had a less than lethal encounter with somebody, you end up on the ground, they're standing above you. It doesn't take but a kick or two to inflict death upon somebody
that,
on the ground.
That was a huge component in the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman trial, right? Because for people who may recall, the testimony and the evidence was that Trayvon Martin was on top of George Zimmerman and banging his head against the hard surface, whether concrete. It was concrete or asphalt, I don't recall.
I think it was concrete.
And so he was in a significant position of advantage, right? So that goes to that ability portion of the analysis.
So if I can show that the opponent, the perpetrator, had the ability to inflict that harm upon me, now I've kind of checked a check mark in terms of reasonableness in terms of my actions and assessment of the situation.
Yep. All right. So opportunity.
Opportunity is another element of the AOJ triangle or criteria, and it's really about proximity. Was the person close enough? Somebody can't call you from across town and say, "Hey, I'm going to show up and kill you." That doesn't give you the right to preemptively ambush them on the way to your location, for instance. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're talking about in terms of opportunity. It could be distance. If the person is, you know, very far from you, if they've got a large knife and they're 50 yards from you, do they have the opportunity to inflict death or great bodily harm upon you from 50 yards? No, probably not. Mm-hmm. Okay. So distance is something to think about. Obstacles, whether there are walls or tables or that sort of thing between you and the perpetrator, particularly if the perpetrator only has a knife or a club or, you know, that sort of thing, that may make a difference as well. And then sometimes elevation and terrain can make a difference too.
One thing that we talk about in the 5-hour class that we teach, we often show a video with Mike Sieglander. And the video is really about the Tueller principle. Mm-hmm. But this Tueller drill or Tueller principle is often misunderstood, but I think it's a good way to illustrate this concept of opportunity. You want to talk a little bit about what the Tueller principle is or how it's often portrayed?
Well, I think number one, it's often portrayed as a rule. I've read
the 21-foot rule, right? Is what it's often
called. I'm pretty sure I've read prosecutors actually use the term 21-foot rule, which is a little scary.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's not a rule. It's simply a principle or a concept. Dennis Tueller was a police officer, Salt Lake City Police Department, and he was in charge of training there. And basically what this – and you need to, when you do your training, you need to make sure you go to a trainer that understands the Tueller drill or some form of that, understands this 21-foot principle, and you can actually run some training drills associated with this. But in any event, basically what it stands for is that it takes a reasonably trained individual, i.e. a police officer, your patrol typical patrol police officer about 1.5 seconds to draw a handgun and place 2 center mass shots on a perpetrator. Okay. The other side of that rule is that the principle is that the average adult male, the 20, 30 year old adult male, can travel about 7 yards or 21 foot in the time that it takes that reasonably trained police officer 1.5 seconds to draw his handgun and put 2 shots on the center mass. If you understand that, you understand that that's sort of general principles that apply. You also would understand that a young male perpetrator within 21 feet with a knife is in fact a deadly threat to you as a police officer or as a typical private citizen as well.
But there's 2 sides to that coin that you've talked about, right? That's the ability of the person who's being attacked, the ability of the person to draw their firearm.
They have the knife. That's
And the ability of that person to draw their firearm and get hits on target. That's one component in the analysis. And then the other component is the ability of the attacker to reach the person. At what distance might they be a danger relative to your ability to draw your firearm and get shots on target? So that's why it's not a rule, because that distance is going to be different for everybody depending on your ability to draw and use your firearm and the ability of the attacker to reach you. So that's why the 21-foot rule is a misnomer, and it's a principle that helps people understand where somebody might be a threat as it relates to them. And that's why people do this drill. Often trainers do various iterations of a drill to help people understand at what distance somebody might be armed with an edged weapon might be a threat to them based on their ability.
Yeah, and it's just guidance is all it is. In our training, sometimes we do this. We don't do the 21 foot tooler drill so that people with knives are running towards people with firearms. I want to get that out. And we won't go into we have people run away with rubber knives and away from the person with the firearm. But it's amazing how long it does take people who think they're gun people to draw a firearm, usually not even from cover. In our they're not drawing from cover, but it takes them a long time to draw and get 2 shots on target. And at the same time, there are other people that have a 1-second draw and can do it much more quickly. So your skill level is going to dictate how far away somebody may be a threat to you if they have an edged weapon. And that's why I would submit to you that it is really important that you hone your skills so that you have basically the skills so that people are not threats to you, even though they're relatively close because of your ability to draw and get shots on target.
Mm-hmm. And so this, again, this all goes to this component in the AOJ triad of opportunity, right? And all of this really goes to the CYA element that Masoud Ayoub talks about, and that's, can you articulate? Can you articulate why you did what you did and why your actions were reasonable to the finder of fact, to the jury? And all of these things play into that, right?
Yep.
Anything else before we move on to Jeopardy?
No. Okay. Once again, we're just covering these things briefly.
Yeah.
And folks, once again, we commend you to the books that we've mentioned previously by Masoud and Andrew Branca.
Yeah. All right, so we've talked about ability, we've talked about opportunity. Now let's talk about Jeopardy. Mike, what's Jeopardy?
Well, Jeopardy is a term that I'm not terribly fond of because it's sort of vague to me in this concept. So I use the term, and I think it's appropriate, manifest intent. So what we're doing is we're concentrating on the perpetrator and asking the question whether they have manifested an intent or demonstrated an intent to commit acts that would result in death or grave bodily harm to me. That's what Jeopardy means, whether the person has manifested an intent. For instance, are they moving towards you? Are they hollering? Are they cussing? Do they have a red face? Do they have clenched fists? Are they very loud? Do they seem to be out of control?
You said that person on the telephone earlier that says, I'm going to kill you. Well, that's a lot different if they say it and they're 10 feet away from you, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And of course, people say, I'm going to kill you. They do it in jest. I mean, but they're not, you play a joke on somebody or whatever, and they say, I'm out to kill you. Then they're just joking. People are just joking. So it's quite different from a situation where someone actually has an intent to commit death or grave robbery.
Well, that's another point. Generally, and this is a general point too, words alone are not enough, right, to constitute a deadly threat. So it has to be words coupled with some overt action, like you said, like moving towards you, like the tone in their voice, are they armed with some sort of weapon, et cetera. Yeah.
So you're going to have to be able to articulate that the fact that you had a reasonable belief that they intended to commit harm. And by that, I mean grave bodily harm or death upon you. And you're going to have to be able to articulate that.
Yeah.
And that's one reason it helps to have training to understand what a manifestation of intent may mean in terms of human interaction or human interpersonal communication, nonverbal communication, for instance.
Yeah, this is one we've mentioned him before, Dr. William April. This is one thing where, unfortunately, he's passed, but he had some great studies and insight and courses about the criminal mind and sort of criminal behavior and how to recognize these indicators, these nonverbal indicators that somebody intends to do you harm or is looking to do harm. And I'll try to link to it in the show notes. I think David Yamani compiled a bunch of resources that are available online by Dr. April. So I'll try to link to that in the show notes as well. Would encourage people to check that out.
Yeah. And I also would encourage folks, and we're affiliate attorneys with the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network, ACLDN, and they've got enormous resources online. They make their newsletter available for free to everybody. But one of the things, there's a booklet they have, as a matter of fact, that's a good booklet. Marty and Gila Hayes are kind of the ramrods of that organization and owners. But I would encourage you to think about joining that organization because they have some, I'm going to use the term DVDs. I'm not sure they send out DVDs anymore, but videos and educational material when you become a member. And I don't remember exactly how much is devoted to this, but there's a section about pre-incident indicators. And it's fascinating. I can't remember who did it. I should. I can see him plain as day, but I'm getting old and it's not on the top of my tip of my tongue. But anyway, that's a good place to go and get some training with respect to this issue of manifest intent or jeopardy.
Yeah,
lots of other things.
The educational materials alone are worth the cost of the membership in our estimation.
Absolutely.
And one thing I'd point out, I'll link to this as well. I'll link to the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network website, but they have this pamphlet, this little booklet called What Every Gun Owner Needs to Know About Self-Defense Law, which I think is a great digest of some of the information that we're talking about here today.
It's not everything. You need to do more, but it's the pamphlet, that is. But their videos are excellent. Some of them are a little dated now, but once again, this area of the law is not new.
I'll just share my experience here. I learned about the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network from Tiger McKee. We attended some training with Tiger McKee in Alabama. It would have been 2010-ish. I don't remember the exact year. Yeah. But he gives out, unfortunately, Tiger McKee has passed as well, so he's no longer with us. But he would always give out this booklet from the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. And I read the booklet and was immediately sort of, I had this realization that, man, there's a lot of stuff out there that I don't know that people need to know about. I mean, people just sort of lackadaisically carry a firearm and think that they're going to be good with no education or training. But I think this booklet is great because it has excellent information, but it also sort of, I think, helps give people the realization that this is really interesting stuff, but I need to know more about this before I just strap on a firearm.
Yeah. I want to make one last little detailed report, then I'm going to follow up with that before I forget it, because I think it's important that people understand when we to kind of finish up the ability, opportunity, and jeopardy or manifest intent, as I refer to it, and others do as well. Those things have to exist simultaneously. So somebody can't have an intent this morning to kill you, but they don't have the opportunity or the ability. This afternoon, they get the ability, but no longer have the manifest intent to do it. So they have to exist simultaneously for you to be able to say that you acted reasonably under the circumstances. So I wanted to make that last point about AOJ.
Yeah.
And then I think you're right. It's amazing to me that people strap a firearm on, go out in public, and have little knowledge, training, or education with respect to the justified use of deadly force. I think it's important to understand, and you probably know this better than me, we won't get into the definition of murder and manslaughter and reckless homicide, but there's this concept in the homicide, killing another human being. Generally, killing another human being under the law is wrong. And it's not one of those that's malum prohibitum. It's malum in se. It is just wrong in any culture to do that. And under the law, you're going to go to jail for the rest of your life if you do that, unless you're justified. And there are this narrow set of circumstances when you're justified in committing homicide. And it's pretty narrow. We just articulated it. Was I facing an immediate, otherwise unavoidable threat of death or grave bodily harm to me or another innocent? And every one of those words are loaded, and every one of those words mean a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack in that. And we've talked about just a small portion of it.
So, and if you make a mistake, and keep in mind, the prosecution is only going to have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that one of those elements didn't exist. We'll take aside the stand your ground and the avoidance issue. But the prosecution is only going to have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt the lack of one of those elements. And if they do, what are you left with?
Murder.
Murder. Manslaughter, homicide, it could be. Yeah. But you're left with facing prison the rest of your life. So I would submit to you that people get these books, they take our class, they pay attention to what's going on in terms of when they're justified to use the force. I've had conversations with people who carry a firearm and just have no idea what they're doing. Yeah. And by the way, I want to say again, we are not advocates for mandatory training. You're American. Make your own choices.
The point of this whole show is to encourage people to take personal responsibility. Yeah. And part of being a responsible gun owner is getting the training and education that you need to act responsibly and to use force responsibly and lawfully.
Absolutely. And you got to do that. Mandatory training usually, well, we won't go into that rabbit hole right now, but it just absolutely is amazing to me that folks spend so much time in making sure they buy the right tool, the gun.
Yeah.
I mean, they research that, they spend enormous hours on it, they change, they do this, they do that. But do they understand that if they make a mistake with regard to the use of force, deadly force, they may spend the rest of their life in prison?
Yeah, and I can't remember the saying that Andrew Branca uses in his show, but it's basically like, know how to use your gun so that you can defend your life, know the law so that you can survive the aftermath. Mm-hmm. That's not right, but that's the gist of it.
Yeah, he has a bet. Yeah. And by the way, once you introduce, and I think I get Andrew's, Franco's mentioned this, once you introduce a firearm into a situation, you now have it's no longer a zero chance that you're going to go to the prison for the rest of your life. When you introduce that into a situation, I probably butchered whatever he says, but yeah, people get the point. And I don't mean to, by saying all this, I don't mean to scare people. I've had people take our class. I know, and it's like, man, I don't know if I want to do that or not. I mean, in a sense, it's almost like, I don't know if I want to take that responsibility or not, is what they're saying. Mm-hmm. And that's fine if you don't, but understand you have that responsibility. And it's not, if you put some time into it, it's not that hard to understand what you need to understand to carry a firearm, but you're going to have to put some effort out.
Yeah. And you've touched on a couple of points here that I just want to draw out a little bit. You mentioned malum in se versus malum prohibitum. Talking about homicide, that's malum in se, because malum in se is a Latin phrase that just means it's wrong in itself. It's something that we all understand is wrong unless there's some justification, right?
And it's in the Ten Commandments. That's how we know.
Versus malum prohibitum is a law that's wrong because it's because the law says it's wrong. It's not wrong in and of itself. So like speeding, going over the speed limit, for instance, that would be an example of malum prohibitum. And we have all kinds of malum prohibitum laws, but you have to know, like you said, Mike, the nuances, how to unpack this standard that we have. Is there an immediate, otherwise unavoidable threat of death or grave bodily harm to me or another innocent person? And you have to not only know that standard, but you have to know all the elements that make up that standard before you're justified in using deadly force against another person. Or else, like you said, you could be going to prison for the rest of your life.
Yep. And it is a way, an example, I think, of, you know, the effort or the time that you may need to put into this. I've always said that people that take Masada Yib's Mag 40 class, and Mag 40 is 40 hours approximately, 20 hours, I think, is on the range, and about 20 hours is in the classroom. So, and I think after you take that class, you're certainly competent from a legal standpoint to carry a firearm and understand these concepts and understand, you know, the responsibilities and the legal standards that are applicable to carrying a firearm in public. So there's an example, 20 hours of work.
One thing that I think most people experience, and this goes into another concept that's called the Dunning-Kruger effect, but the more education that you have about the use of firearms and the law regarding the use of force, including deadly force, the more or the less cavalier you are about using force and the more reserved you are, because you understand the consequences, you understand the likelihood that even if you're innocent, you may be charged, and the devastating effect that can have on you mentally, emotionally, psychologically, and on the lives of the attacker. And your family, for that matter. So I think the more education you have, the more knowledge you have, the more responsible you are, the more reserved you are about the use of deadly force. And this Dunning-Kruger effect is basically just stands for the proposition that the less training you have,
or competency
you have, the more you overestimate your ability. Versus the more training and education you have, the more competency you have, the more you underestimate your ability. And you see that all the time in the firearms world. People routinely come to our classes and think that they're good because they've been around firearms their whole life and struggle to pass a basic class. So this is not something to be taken lightly. Read these books that we've talked about, In the Gravest Extreme by Masad Ayoub, The Law of Self-Defense by Andrew Branca. And of course, if you can take one of our classes, do that as well. And check out Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. Join their network. Consume all the educational materials they have. Anything else you want to say, Mike?
Now, I will mention something about, you know, I said take Mag 40, 20. There's 20 of those, 40 of those hours, 20 you spent in the classroom. ACLDN is a great resource. One other thing ACLDN is good for is the monthly newsletter. Because just, you know, you may take Mag 40 and read two or three books, but that doesn't make you good for the rest of your life. You still need to do, you know, kind of like in the attorney world, we have to have continuing education credits, that sort of thing. So the ACLDN, for instance, they have ongoing newsletters, things like that. Stay involved. I know Tom Givens, what's his, or he has a
Rangemaster. Yeah, the Rangemaster.
It's really good.
The Rangemaster monthly newsletter is excellent.
And we've talked about a lot of things. So, I mean, keep up with it, you know, renew your knowledge and keep doing things area.
It's a knife that has to be continually sharpened or else the edge will get rusty for sure.
Yeah, and the other thing is, too, one of the reasons that we do this, obviously we're a conduit here. I didn't think of any of this stuff. I'm just passing on what I've been lucky enough to learn from other people. But that's what we'd like for folks that listen to this podcast or take our training to do. Try to pass this on to somebody else and so that it spreads.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what we want to do.
All right, Michael, I think that's where we'll leave it for now. AOJ, I hope everybody has a better understanding about what that means and how it fits into the broader picture and analysis about the lawful use of force and self-defense. Mike, anything else you want to say before we close up here?
No, I think I'm good.
All right. Well, thanks again for getting back in the saddle for Monday Gun Day. I hope everybody enjoyed it and learned a little something. If you did, of course, don't forget to like and subscribe to help us spread the message of freedom. And until next time, remember, you are the Forge of Freedom.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Forge of Freedom. Be sure to subscribe wherever you heard this podcast so you never miss a future episode. For more information or to connect with Alex, you can go to forgeoffreedom.com or follow him on Twitter @ForgeOfFreedom. Until next time, remember, you are the Forge of Freedom.